General Thorne, Rail 9. You mentioned that you often had to effectively take control of the 4th Norfolk.
Mm.
What was the commanding officer doing then while you were running it?
Well, he was, of course, this was the period in time when he, as a lawyer, was doing his normal job, and it was during the week. And broadly, I just got on and administered everything, went to the drill nights with the regimental sergeant major, worked with the quartermaster to prepare for the weekends. And broadly, the commanding officer didn't need to be there, and I could pick up the phone and talk with him if I needed to. And so I think it was an ideal task for me to do that. My predecessor, Alex Turnbull, who was a very, very experienced officer, was a senior major. I was a junior captain. It just so happened that the Territorial Army in Norfolk wanted me there because my family is a very strong Norfolk man, you know, very well known, particularly on the sporting side. And so, you know, this is one of the sort of quirks that I was known to be a reasonably good officer. And, you know, I was a great sportsman. And said, right, he's just right for the TA and he'll make a lot of friends, which is exactly what I did. And I got a lot of experience.
So you were learning on the job about administration and so on.
Mm. And about the span of command, the term span of command is, which is probably the most. It's five subunits, each of which has an effective function, say three or four rifle companies, or three rifle companies, a minister company, and a sport company. It is the norm, and maybe you could have said. But broadly, I began to understand these realities of what is controllable. An extension of being signal officer. A signal officer saw it all as well. So I had a very good grounding. I mean, signal officer became adjutant, TA adjutant. And then, you know, you'll go into the roles of company commander and commanding officer in a very strong position because you understand the realities of command and control.
How the machine works.
Yeah.
Mm. Did you find that you could sort of trust the companies to get on with their own business to some extent?
You had to. Not only, by that I mean, if you tried to interfere too much, in a sense, they could drift away. You got off, you were on their skin. That was a disaster. So it wasn't good military discipline. It was, again, leadership to get them to do things and to coax them. And some were better being coaxed than others.
Well, I mean, one always imagines the Territorial Army is much less formal in its discipline than the regulars. Did you find that each company had its own particular character?
Yeah, I merged on their company commander because most of them had company commanders for at least 3 years and some for six, seven. And that company commander rapidly did his more junior officers and the sergeant major. They imposed themselves in terms of their personality on the company. Whereas in the regular battalion, you didn't need that quality of control. If you got it, impressing your personality on your soldiers in the regular battalion, then you were doubly strong because you had the discipline and you had that. The Territorial Army, you basically, the discipline wasn't bad, but it was liable to be suspect. If pressures were developed, and so the company commander needed to lead by example even more than the Red Army. And some of them did and some of them didn't.
How rapidly did that become apparent to you? How long did it take you to get a fairly firm opinion?
2 to 3 months.
Was the 4th Battalion well recruited?
Not particularly. It had some of the finest deadwood in the world, I would say. It had a lot of people who were on our books and who never turned up. And that gradually got sorted out. But it wasn't terribly well recruited and took some time to get that right. And that's long after I left. Now it's very well recruited, it's equivalent.
Why was that, do you think, that it, you know, that it had the deadwood? What was the...
Almost administrative inertia. Every battalion in the Tet Orani that time had quite a lot of debris. You hung on to people because you weren't quite sure they'd come back. Rather like that.
Was there any attempt to recruit more actively?
Oh, yes. And gradually, we started to work our way upwards. And it had begun with Alex Turnbull. So, you know, these things fluctuate up and down. And the board event had me at quite a low ebb, but moving up.
And were you focusing your efforts on any particular age group or any particular type or category?
Obviously the younger ones. And we did very well, actually, in the sort of gay competitions. I remember us winning the majority of them in the September that I was there. I'd been there about a year. And we did extremely well. We won the training competition, we won the shooting, we won a whole lot of things. Now that does your sort of morale and your recruiting capacity, your pulling capacity, get you becoming a lot of good. It lasted about 3 or 4 months, and then you could be doing something else rather well.
Keeping in the public eye.
Absolutely.
What was the relations with Norfolk Society then? Because in Nottingham you seem to have had very good connections.
And the same in Norfolk. I mean, Norfolk is even more feudal in a sense than Nottingham. And the army were viewed in the regiment in particular. 9th and Foot had a terrific, rightly, terrific reputation in the county of Norfolk. It still does. And because it had won 5 Victoria Crosses in World War II, more than any British or Commonwealth regiment, and it had a regimental tie with a passport past any police in the country, it was looked on with enormous respect. And so you took care to foster that reputation, but you didn't. You were in friendly country, looked on with approval.
Did you find that you could act as a sort of recruiting agency for the regulars as a TA outfit?
Oh, very definitely. And some of the officers signed on in the region at that time came from Norfolk. And that's where it helps. If in Norfolk, you needed to be, as an officer, you needed to be either hunting, shooting, fishing, or cricket, squash. And I was in the latter variety. But I was playing at the top level in the county, and everybody knew I was an army officer, and Michael Falcon, who is the great president of the Norfolk County Cricket Club, when the captain was ill, he autocratically said, right, Captain Thorne will captain the side, because I was an officer, officer ethos.
Captain to captain.
Captain, he can get on with it. Well, probably not the most suitable. But I wasn't bad, and I got away with it. And I learned again. But that the attitude was, he's an army officer, he's in the regiment, he's a good cricketer, right, and he's not doing badly at all in the county team, he can captain the side.
You mentioned that you took the staff college examination while you were adjutant. Were you able to study effectively?
One of the great joys of that is you work weekends, and you prepare for the weekends during the week and do the tournaments. That gave me plenty of time to study and play sport. And I think I mentioned that, I have a twin brother. One of the more remarkable situations that had happened when we were at school now happened again, because we both took the exam the same year. We both passed, and we both passed out in terms of the exam, the top 10%. So we got, I think, some money or something, I can't remember what it was. We got an automatic entry into the staff college.
You didn't have to have a nomination?
No, we didn't have to have a nomination because we passed out in the top 10%. And I'm not at all sure we didn't get budged exactly the same marks. I can't remember, but it was something, people who came and looked up, because you had a number, name. And so when they put the name on, suddenly found Thorne, and virtually the same sort of marks,
What subjects did you have to What subjects did you have to study in preparation for this exam? Do you remember what?
Well, it was an element of military history. There were tactics. There was administration, logistics, principles of war. I mean, that's just some of them. Current affairs. I don't know what the exam is now, but I would think not entirely different, but different format probably.
Yes, what was the form, and did you have to write three-hour question papers, essays in 3 hours?
Just that.
How many papers did you have to take? Was it a...
I think you just did the exam over a period of 3 or 4 days. Or maybe it was a week, but very intensive. Yeah. And a certain amount of... I went on a course for about a week to make sure I was sort of eased up, particularly on current affairs.
Do you remember who ran that? Was that Education Corps? Or?
No, it was Royal Army Education Corps. Mm. And I went on the legal course because of the military law was another. I went on the legal course. I enjoyed it because I quite like the academic world. I love history. And so, you know, it was in a sense a pleasure. But, of course, you're very, very keen to pass. And I suppose what it taught me was I was bloody idle at school. And I got two of the worst A-levels you possibly could in order to get into Sandhurst without having to take the exam. But when it came to Staff College and the exam there, because in a sense, you know, it was much more formal pointing the horse to the jump, I learnt that I got a reasonably high IQ. And that came as a surprise to me because I'd certainly, you know, I'd not bothered about it, never thought about it, and just got on with life, but hadn't actually shone academically at school. I'd shone in terms of leadership and in terms of sport.
It's a matter of motivation.
It is. You're so right.
When you got to Staff College, what was the syllabus that you followed?
Poor. Well, in the first 3 to 4 months, was taking all foods or staff duties world. Taking us through minor tactics up to company level, educating us in the equipment of our own and other armies, generally giving us a very, very sound grounding in writing English, in administration and all that, so that you could step on in the... Because I went to Shrimpton the first time, I should have said, for 3 months, and did the short science course there. To find pretty hard. But anyhow, Staff College, it was preparing yourself and getting all the basics well bedded in. Then it was, in the next third, it was tactics of all kinds and battlefield tours. And the final element was integrated strategic aspect and new look, which was really the sort of the scientific and new world of you know, future tactics and so on and so forth, and writing papers in small groups to try and impress your DS.
What was the main method of study? Was it in the syndicate, discussion, or...?
In the syndicate and in the lecture hall. Major lectures in the syndicate and then writing. Those three sort of elements.
Did you have to do a lot of writing? What was the rate of commitment? An essay a week or more than one essay a week?
Once every 10 days. And some of them under pressure. And interspersed with very good tactics instruction. And out in the field and in the classroom. Very logical, very methodical. Standing a very high standard. You could see why both at Sandhurst and at South College we've got a certain reputation for training other people's officers was in a very good way. And there were a lot of service officers from across the world in syndicates, including a lot from the Commonwealth.
When you went on your battlefield tour, do you remember where you went?
Yes, Normandy. And
which battles did you look at?
Goodwood.
Goodwood, yes.
I was very impressed with the way that was run, and with the personalities who came and talked, these lovely old figures who got good memories, and I think would love the battlefield tour themselves. Very good for their morale, as for ours.
Do you remember what lessons were drawn from Goodwood specifically?
No, and I've been making it up if I did.
Do you remember any of the other major actions that you looked at in Normandy?
Well, I think we should go back to Buddha in my whole life. It was that our power at time, and we don't think we actually appreciate it sufficiently then, our power influenced the battle by blocking off, by making difficult reinforcements to appear on the battlefield at the time they wanted, but not being able to move them at a time that they'd like, during the day and move at night, all sorts of indications like that. Which, you know, is a combination of the all arms, including our, which in the end turned the battle, which was, you know, at times quite a close one thing, it was very hard fought, and in which the Germans, as usual, had made excellent choice of ground. So you come back to the Germans understood that ground. As I think a lot of ours did, but a lot of our officers, but you know, it was notable that if we hadn't had our part of the side, I think we would have been very pushed to achieve success.
Who were these veterans? Do you remember any of them by name?
No, I can't. Mm. I should have. I just remember the figures. And they had them at different levels. They had a brigade commander, a battalion commander, a company commander, and two or three company commanders, I think. And they all had a good story to tell.
When you were doing your tactics in the Star College syllabus, I mean, you'd already been doing this in the battalion and so forth. Had there been any innovations or changes in tactical ideas since you've joined and since you've been given your initial training?
And getting a wider perspective. And now I think we were still equipped in a way which made it difficult for us to take that mind leap into new tactics. The air mobile idea and the air landed and all that, the whole advantage of having helicopter systems. I don't think it was being aired and aired quite effectively, but we were still in the infancy of using helicopters and anti-tank role of the major airline, of Exxon Hell Tank, which happened about 3 years after I left South College. That was the sort of, you know, the current thinking in combat development was towards that, but it had frankly through the Star College, but it wasn't common currency at all.
Not throughout the whole army?
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It needed to be, and I think gradually we did. You know, we've become much, much better at that.
Did you go out on a lot of shoots while you were?
Yes, really. Very enjoyable. The only trouble with all these tubes is that I think the Staff College sometimes is obsessed too much with teaching rather than with getting people to think on their feet. There was too often a sort of swinging back to the pink rather than letting the thing flow. It caused a lot of confidence in the VS to let these conversations flow, and obviously I'm trying to steer people towards the pink. I think there's too much of a concern about that. The pink gives a guideline. Now maybe I'm being unduly critical, but I just felt at times that good points were made and they were not savoured enough by the DS because they weren't actually the pink solution.
So you're being put on the tram lines?
Yeah.
Effectively.
Tendency. Not so much as the Americans or the Russians. It continues to be an instinct, I think.
Yes, as it always is to provide the DS solution. But, at that time, was there any discussion of the question of the desirability of doctrine? Because the British Army had always run on principles which are broad, philosophical, open to interpretation. Whereas other armies, like the Americans and Russian, tended to be more conventional in their thinking and to have more detailed, prescriptive doctrine.
my main account on that is, one, I don't think there was, because my memory of Staff College, one thing I came away from, is a much better understanding that small armies are different to large armies. Mm-hmm. It's very important if they're going to operate effectively that they, in fact, have considerable autonomy in individual action, mm-hmm. Without having a concerted single aim in whatever task they're doing. And I picked up at least some of that conviction from Staff College. I picked up the rest of it when studying the Russian army, which I've done quite a lot since. And also the American army, and understanding that, you know, when you have a large monolithic state, you've probably got a large monolithic army. And certainly with the Americans, rather than similar, there's a tendency towards producing results by mass application, rather than much more flexible, intuitive, free thinking approach based upon good equipment, good training, and the confidence to work together and to think laterally.
I mean, it's often been said that in armies like the Russian army, or even the French army, which have the idea that there's one aim, one solution, this is really a product of their cultural conditioning brought about by being members of the Roman Catholic community in the case of the French, or the Orthodox in the case of the Russians, whereas in Britain, the primary intellectual influence is Anglicanism, where, you know, all can, some do, and none must. And
exactly.
Do you think there's anything in that the Anglican mentality or the Protestant mentality is more open?
Could be. I'm not sure the extent to which religion actually affects our thinking these days, sadly. I do think that we are more reluctant to be regimented than the United States or Russia.
Are we just more bloody-minded? Is that a possible reason?
Overconfident at times. Benevolently overconfident. As I'd say, an abiding problem with the British. And it means that usually, I mean, we get out of these problems at the last bloody minute because we realize we're very frightened. So we then set to and find a way out of the hole in rapid quick time. But quite often we've walked into the hole when others more careful would have seen the hole. So we create our own problems sometimes. And it's from this, even now, this benevolent overconfidence. We're different, we're British.
What about the map games? Did you have command posts and telephone games?
Yes, love those. Mm. They're really very exciting, very absorbing. Lasted about 48 hours and very intense. I really thought they were excellent.
What were they based on? Were they all based on Germany? Were they all based upon the idea of...
Mainly Germany. I can't remember them having a colonial situation. It was Germany, but maybe I'm wrong. Can't remember the others.
I was going to ask if there was a predominant type of scenario, you know, whether it was all a matter of a fighting withdrawal, or whether it was sometimes we were on the offensive.
Absolutely. Obviously, I remember withdrawal was a specific task, one that went but I don't think there was a predilection for defence and withdrawal. I think they did a lot. So.
All the phases.
Very necessary.
Do you remember anyone particular from overseas who was in your syndicate? Because you were mentioning there were a lot of overseas students.
The one that I remember particularly was this chap, Major Stephen. He was basically Major Stephen, S-T-E-W-E-N. Krishna Wadwili, who was an outstanding Finnish officer. And I learned a lot from him. And I've got in my house today the Finnish hunting knives he gave me. and you would run very gently down your arm, it would all the hair from your, you know, all the hair from your object like that, without any pressure, because it's so sharp. You know, that's a sort of digression. Basically, we have charming Indians and Pakistanis and Australians, New Zealanders, South Africans, you know, the lot. And Germans and French, Belgians, another charming Belgian officer. They sent high quality people, obviously, you know, expect that. They gave us tremendous value. And good war experience, one or two of them. The French, I think, he fought in Algeria and in Vietnam. The German, I think, couldn't claim that. Belgium had been in the Congo and that just finished with the 1960,
wasn't it? The collapse. Yes.
Been there with that battalion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they've got a tale to tell, a number mm-hmm. of them. The Dutchman was charming, brilliant man. So in each country, did themselves justice. They sent.
What about your DS? Had any of them had any experience of intensive fighting?
Matt Abraham.
Oh, no, he was a 12th Lance, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was my first. I liked him a lot. Very laid back. Longest personality. Leo Plummer was another. There was a 13th, 18th officer. They all had a bit of experience, but none of them was I recall, had massive military decorations.
I think Matt Abraham had been a troop commander in in North Africa, and then later a squadron leader.
He was a very good guy. I don't think he ended up there, did he?
He was a major general eventually, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he deserved to be. He was, again, very intelligent. And relaxed. A lot of DS that sort of quote. But I think find it difficult to be. Matt was relaxed. Proper cavalry officer.
How soon before the end of the course did you know where you were going when you left Staff College?
End of October. I was sent to be the Army Staff Officer on the War Studies team doing the General Degree in Warfare at King's College, and that was at the Royal Air Force College at Cranmer. And I was, again, enormously lucky there, because if you're the only army officer at an RAF college for young officers, then you're going to be given all sorts of jobs to do. And I ran their cricket, I ran their squash, adventure training, and so on. I was sort of right into, I did this degree study where I was learning as fast as they were. I learned more about armoured warfare at Cranmer than I did at Staff College. I ran read a Gorkowitz and armoured warfare, understood it. Basically, the King's College course educated me in the art of war. I learned more about than at Staff College. And I made friends in the Air Force who are now at the top of the Air Force. So, and they all knew it, and I was at DS. So, you know, at the moment, in getting the RAF to help us to produce officers to help the National Schools Festival. One of them, the airman of the personnel, was one of my cadets. So there's no question.
Offered to give him a bad red ink correction if he didn't help.
Well, more that he learned some things with me. And he, he remembered them vividly. He was a guy who tried to march his little flight of cadets through the one that I was the DS for. So I gave him a note in military, never march troops from another formed troops.